CliffCentral.com.
So how are you, Canton?
It took me a half hour to get from the Rivonia off-ramp to here. And you know this is a distance of, what, about 2Ks?
So the load shedding?
Well, no, it's not load shedding. The traffic lights are actually working.
So is it just traffic?
Oh, yeah. Unreal. I have no idea what...
Maybe these are people who are going off to do productive things, and we should be grateful that there's still an economy buzzing.
Well, I suspect that the reason for that is that the traffic was so horrendous yesterday that everyone decided to leave early today.
So yeah, it was kind of
a ripple effect. Thanks, guys, by the way, for telling me about this tennis match.
Oh.
Okay, now I've got to tell you where this comes from.
Canton called me last night. He's got terrible FOMO, Canton Pelé. He calls me last night at like 7 o'clock and says, oh, thanks for my tickets for Jojo Rabbit. Because you were in Hyde Park and you saw...
I was in Hyde Park and Steve Bretherick comes up to me and says, hi, you here for the movie? I said, what movie? He said, Garrett's movie.
Yeah, we specially didn't invite you.
Well, that's par for the course. Every time there's alcohol
Sia
in bulk.
Says he's but got, Sia says he's got a copy of the email that he sent you that you didn't reply to, so you were invited.
Sia does email, but then he loses his phone, so I'll cut him some slack.
All right, so anyway, the traffic was a nightmare.
Going back to talk about this, the tennis thing.
Mm.
Now, some months ago, Sarah booked tickets.
Is your wife, right?
Yeah, okay. To... a performance that's happening in Kirstenbosch on Saturday night.
Oh, yes.
This is Yo-Yo Ma.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yo-Yo Ma's doing a solo cello rendition of 6 Bach pieces, which is, you know, so...
Oh, you have to choose between that and the rough and the
dull. No. It's no choice for me. It's Yo-Yo Ma anytime. But okay. I finally got off my ass and started booking plane tickets last night. So, you know, booked the outbound flight, no problem, and then looked at return flights coming on Sunday morning, and every single flight is full. And you want to book flights back on the likes of SAA, for example, it's 7,000 rand for a one-way ticket.
So that's why it's going to cost you. But Yo-Yo Ma, you say, is worth it.
Yo-Yo Ma is worth it, yes. Well, I did not fly SAA, by the way.
You're a man of culture. Uh-huh. No one's flying SAA at the moment. Apparently, there are flights that are just not picking up any passengers at the moment. It's a bit of a disaster. And that is the market telling SAA that they don't believe in them. It's not through any lack of funding at this point. They did get another bailout. So let's see what happens.
All right. Before we start, I want to do a shameless plug.
All right. Go for it.
I started a blog, and the first episode is this morning. And the whole idea is that I get lots of these little thought processes that pop up every so often, mainly on places like Twitter.
Go on.
Which one doesn't really have space to engage with on Twitter. And so the idea really is to actually take that conversation to another space where I can just outline a stream of consciousness that deals with that. So they're very short reads.
Okay.
But just dealing with...
Well, this is a good use of Twitter, I've got to say, because if there is any use for it, it is usually to link people to articles or to start conversations in other fora, because this is not the greatest forum for having meaningful conversations.
Exactly, yeah.
So, all right, so bring it on. Let's go.
CanthonPelé.com.
This is Canthon's, what do you call them, quick fire response to... a bunch of things on social media.
Yes, yeah. And I'm going to try and do that on a daily basis.
Excellent.
Apropos of F.W. de Klerk.
Yes.
I actually had lunch with F.W. de Klerk in 1996.
You cheat, you liar, you untrustworthy traitor.
It was part of a trip that we – remember that I worked for – I was Dion Duplessis's deputy at independent newspapers at the time.
Right.
And he had this very good thing that he used to do every year, which is that he'd take his management team down for the State of the Nation address.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, we would then set up meetings with a range of people. So, yeah, you know, we had dinner with Tito Mboweni. We had lunch with de Klerk. We had Joan Chancellor was Minister of Intelligence at the time.
That's
so
right.
You know, he took us over to the boat. And we did the rounds pretty much with most people in government. And, of course, at the time, you know, FW was... had just stepped down from the Government of National Unity.
Right.
Yes. And, it was an interesting lunch. It was FW, Rolf Mayer, and all of the guys who were part of the top brass at the time.
You must have learned new things every time you saw them.
Yeah, very much. But I guess, you know, the interesting thing for me was, you know, the conversation that I had with him at the time was, I said, well, you guys are now withdrawing from the government of national unity, but what are you actually going to offer the voters that's different? Because right now, if you look in terms of economic performance, the ANC is actually ticking all of the boxes that I actually find useful.
They were, yes. Absolutely, at that time they were.
Yeah, and that conversation is, well, you'll find that on my website as well, that piece that I wrote in 96. You know, just go and search for de Klerk and you'll probably find it. The other thing, your point and de Klerk's point around the fall of the Berlin Wall being related to our emancipation is absolutely right. In fact, my junior independent work at Princeton, you know, I was a political science major there, apart from teaching computer science, was dealing specifically with the events that led up to the ANC and the National Party starting behind the scenes negotiations.
Right.
That would eventually lead to CODESA and all of that kind of stuff. But it was brokered behind the scenes by Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Something I think a lot of people don't know.
Yes. And this entire idea that the ANC liberated us is a crock.
Yeah.
Robert Mugabe liberated Zimbabwe.
Sure.
Okay. In our situation, what we had was a negotiated settlement, and everyone shook hands at the end of it. And I really expected that all parties would abide by those agreements, no matter how unfair either side might have seen them at the time.
And remember that at this stage also, any compromise would have left either party, if not both, unhappy. So if you could make them both equally unhappy with the compromise, you knew it was a good compromise.
Exactly. And it worked for the longest time until Gedler Shakiza came along
and demolished it.
And demolished it.
Well, again, I think that more information is always to be preferred over less. And my big problem here is not whether or not you agree with F.W. de Klerk, whether or not you have your own idea of revisionist history in mind, whether you're actively avoiding the truth and being willfully ignorant or not. But the problem is to cancel a person. And in this case, it was all in the news this week because of Gwen Nguyenia. And the newspaper's doing a scurrilous job, by the way, of saying that she was praising him, which she's decried and denied, and said that was not the case at all. She spent an enormous amount of time with him. As someone who's in politics, and particularly in policy within the DA, she thought it would be useful to sit down and talk to de Klerk, a man who had been in government for some time and was involved in the policy that set up the government of national unity inter alia. She thought that it would be useful to talk to him. Not a bad attitude to have, to learn.
It's always a good attitude to talk to people, no matter how repulsive you find them.
And it was spun into, well, she admires him, which I think is just a dirty hatchet job by our media.
Well, they do that all the time, don't they?
Hmm.
Because they fail to understand subtlety. But the point around cancel culture is to avoid a conversation.
Yeah.
And the point is that you need to keep the conversations going. It doesn't mean that at any point you need to subvert rule of law in so doing.
On that note, and since we have been complimentary about Twitter this morning, one of the few uses left available to me on Twitter is to hear really interesting speakers. Alistair Stewart, who is a well-known man in the UK, has made a speech which I think a lot of people would like to hear. It's on unheard.com, that's unherd.com. About the seeds of totalitarianism, which can be seen in precisely this cancel culture we're talking about. All right, let's get into some news, Canton. First of all, Jacob Zuma is very ill, so we obviously send thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers, absolutely.
Yes.
By the way, everyone who was singing Shinewam, that is not a machine gun. All right, just so that we're clear about that.
You mean the picture was not? Yeah, picture, no, that was not a machine gun. Exactly. It was a rifle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So probably could be used for assassination, so let's just put that out there. Makes me wonder who's in his scope, but hey.
Bulelo told me that, interestingly enough, or it could have been Sia this morning, that said that the sick note that was offered by that doctor in question for Jacob Zuma in court, that sick note came from Unherd. Sorry, just Canton was asking me about that that website that I mentioned. Unherd, as in do not heard. the doctor who wrote that sick note for Jacob Zuma is the same doctor who wrote the sick note for David Mabuza some time ago. and that this doctor did not specify what the medical condition was that Jacob Zuma was suffering from, but that as a result of it, he could not appear in court, which led to the arrest warrant being issued, which will lead to nothing at all.
Do we have a name for this doctor?
I'd love to know. If we can find out, that might be helpful, because I can think of a few occasions where I might need to get out of something and he might be useful to me. But let's not pretend that that there isn't one among us who hasn't at some point needed a sick note for something which was not that serious. In Jacob Zuma's case, this guy isn't just, he doesn't give a shit, which is why he posted that picture. Doesn't care.
Yes, he doesn't.
All right, can we, because I know you're itching to talk, I know I've been talking about it all week, but let's talk about what's going on. The big news of the day today, Donald Trump's been acquitted.
How is that big news? We've been saying this for how many months?
Yes, but Canton, it's finally happened, and the Democrats were laboring under the misapprehension that somehow things would be different. And I think a lot of people who just do not like Donald Trump, some people I know very well who just have an absolute obsession with him, and it's unhealthy in some ways, were thinking that this might be where their dreams come true, and he is impeached and he's removed from office, and we have President Mike Pence for just a few months, and then the Democrats could win with great candidates that they have.
But the absurdity of thinking that they could actually pull off a two-thirds majority in the Senate in order to impeach, which is what's necessary.
It's not a 50-50 situation.
No, it's not a 50-50 scenario. And they weren't even able to pull off a 50-50 scenario.
And they were calling
even, even though Mitt Romney crossed the floor.
Yeah, Mitt Romney made very clear that he thought that Donald Trump should be impeached.
Yes. Look, I can't blame Mitt Romney, because Mitt Romney, as the losing candidate against Barack Obama, actually pulled more votes than Donald Trump did as the winning candidate in his election.
That's right. And also, it's worth mentioning that the Democrats kept shifting the goalpost. It was eventually about witnesses. Should we call more witnesses? This is where it all broke down last Friday. Why they didn't bring those witnesses while they had control of the process in the House is beyond me. Because they could have.
But they've never had witnesses from the get-go. Everything was on the basis of hearsay. Every single thing. There was not a single witness to the actual phone call, other than the purported whistleblower, who, again, was a hearsay whistleblower.
Mm-hmm. So there just wasn't enough evidence. There was not even a crime alleged.
Yes. And you impeach people for high crimes and misdemeanors.
This wasn't even a low crime.
Yes. And more to the point, in terms of the witnesses that were actually called, the repeated calls for Hunter Biden to be called to actually answer questions in terms of what exactly he was doing in Ukraine in the first place, earning $50,000 a month.
That remains an unanswered question.
Absolutely.
And Joe has not had to talk to anyone about it, except when he gets cornered by someone in the media at some event, some fundraiser or campaigning event of his. He has not said anything about it. He's denied it and denied it and denied it. Hunter Biden continues to be at large, driving Porsches and getting on exciting and sexy dates with new girls, and denying that he's the father of children who are born in various parts of the United States. No word from Hunter Biden. He's not going to be called to account for what was clearly a situation where he was paid money because his surname was Biden and his father at that stage was vice president. Just seems not to be an issue worth anyone investigating.
And it's probably not going to be investigated for quite a while. But I actually had a lot prepared to say in terms of Trump, but Gareth, I'm afraid you've already said pretty much all of it, because I saw your post on Facebook, which actually pretty much nailed it in terms of how the Democrats completely lost the plot for this. And you were quite right. All they needed to do was to actually just shut the fuck up and let Trump continue to dig himself into various holes, which he does very well.
He can't help himself.
Yes.
All you have to do is stay out of the way.
And instead, what they did was they just kept trying to make him out to be this horrendous person, which then allowed him to go back to his constituency and say, hey, look,
they're victimizing me.
And people are actually believing it.
Well, they are trying. The Democrats are desperately scrambling to decide on who their candidate is going to be to take on Donald Trump at the end of this year. They've got five left out of a field of 24 candidates who were running in the primaries. Some of the people who the brilliant and always wise mainstream media said were the absolute front runners and would would clock everybody else.
What is the result of Iowa, by the way?
There isn't a result.
They don't have a result yet.
Now, I want you to...
You know, I think that every country in Africa should send observers across to the U.S. to ensure that the election process
absolutely.
Is free and fair, because there's something here that's really suspicious.
Now, they used a new app which was developed by someone who'd worked for the Hillary Clinton campaign before, but I want you to listen to this and try to figure out how this works, okay? And I honestly don't know where to begin, but I'm going to let you hear it and you try to figure it out. This is from MSNBC about the Iowa caucus and how the voting works. It's 2 minutes. And if you can, by the end of this, tell me how the Democrats run their caucus in Iowa, I will give you the Nobel Peace Prize that we all know should go to Greta Thunberg. Okay? Listen.
There are three different categories. They were all just released at once. What you're seeing on your screen right now, this is the state delegate equivalent category. This is... So the numbers you see underneath, 359 for Buttigieg, 334 for Sanders, 243 for Elizabeth Warren. These are state delegate equivalents. Now, remember, there are about 2,100 of these statewide. So Buttigieg with 359, that's accounting for 27%. You can start to do the math of what that accounts for. This is a complicated formula where each precinct in the state is worth a certain number of state delegate equivalents. They work their way up. Notably, let me make sure I saw this right. This is the final product. This is the initial preference. Yes, we have a discrepancy right now. Huh. The initial preference when people showed up. Remember, these are not final results right now. He said 62% of precincts. We got to see what that exactly accounts for in terms of votes here.
But
right now,
yet?
The numbers that the Iowa Democratic Party just released, the initial preference in these precincts, you can see, was Sanders 24, Buttigieg 21, Warren 19, Biden 15. You can see Klobuchar 13. And you can see what happens. Remember, in every precinct, 15%, the magic number. So let's show you what happened then. Again, for all these precincts, this is the second, this is the reallocation. So watch, remember those numbers? Now watch this. And there you go. So Sanders on the second allocation continues to lead much tighter. So how does Sanders lead in the state delegate equivalent? How does Buttigieg lead in the state delegate equivalent if he's not leading on the second allocation? It gets into, and I got to take a look here very closely, but my theory, my suspicion here, strong suspicion would be what we've been talking about. These counties are weighted differently here.
Oh,
the rural counties have a little bit more clout when it comes to the state delegate equivalents, and you can see here Buttigieg in dark blue. These are rural counties. These are rural counties.
If you can figure out exactly how this works, you are a genius, because even this guy from MSNBC can't, and it's his whole job.
Well, essentially his job was to stand up there and say that, you know, either Biden or Warren was in the lead,
but they weren't,
and they weren't. And now what they're trying to do is to try and spin exactly why all of their predictions in terms of how this was going to go has actually not played itself out. It's
and
amazing.
Poor Bernie Sanders is really feeling the burn of socialism, because they've taken votes that were his and they've given them to Pete Buttigieg, some of them to Biden, some of them to Warren. It's real redistribution of assets. People who wanted to vote for Biden, for Bernie, have found out that their votes have actually gone elsewhere. It's very bizarre.
It's totally bizarre, yes.
But that is how socialism works, and we know Bernie is a dyed-in-the-wool socialist.
I'm sure that Buttigieg will be happy to take Bernie as his vice presidential candidate.
Why are the Democrats afraid that Bernie might actually be the candidate? Can you answer that question?
Well, probably because of the fact that, you remember when we had this discussion last week and you asked who was my preferred candidate, and I said Bernie, and you said what? And I said, well, because in terms of foreign policy. Now, if Bernie had been in the hot seat at the time of Libya happening, remember Hillary Clinton was the one who drove that operation,
right,
then Libya would not have happened. So we would not have had that type of destruction. The Democrats' foreign policy is significantly more insidious than that of Donald Trump's. Donald Trump's foreign policy is very clear. He hates China. He hates Muslims. He loves the Saudis.
Right.
And that's it. And he doesn't deviate from that principle at all. He doesn't mess around with little Kim just simply because of the fact that it doesn't actually feature on his radar. He doesn't think why America should be protecting the South Koreans in any case and wants them to pay for the troops that are stationed there. It's all very simple. But in the case of the Democrats, remember the wars that have been fought. Syria happened because of the fact that the Obama administration was basically funding the White Helmets, who were basically ISIS, who caused that destruction that was happening around there. The devastation, I mean, the drones that continued to pound Yemen during the Obama era. All of that stuff. So if you look in terms of what Sanders would do to the Democrat war machine, and it is a Democrat war machine, he would shut it down. And on that basis, I think that the Democrats have every reason to be terrified of Bernie Sanders.
But Bernie Sanders has been sidelined already before, during his primary...
Yes, yeah, so the Democratic National...
During his primary challenge against Hillary Clinton, he was basically cut out.
They rigged it.
Yeah, yes, the DNC, which is the Democratic National Convention. And this was the real political interference from Russia, or from the Ukraine, if you believe Donald Trump. But the fact is there was actual meddling in the DNC's email, in their server, and Bernie was,
no, there
was cut
there
out.
There wasn't meddling in the server. What happened was the hacks exposed the fact that the meddling had taken place. So the Russians did not meddle, or the Ukrainians, or whoever you want to call it, they did not meddle. The bone of contention is how dare they hack into the DNC servers and expose the fact that we were undermining Bernie Sanders.
And they did. So Bernie's got, he's got an axe to grind, and it looks like they're going to do the same thing to him again this year.
It looks very much like they're going to do the same thing
to him.
So
poor old Bernie, I'm kind of feeling, even though he and I are politically at opposite ends, I'm kind of feeling sorry for him, and so are you by the sound of things.
Well, you know, I find, you know, Bernie's policies, you know, completely repulsive, and it's going to be a disaster for the U.S. But at the same time, I do believe that people have every right to elect the leaders of their choice, no matter how stupid they happen to be.
Someone correcting you here, Kawe saying, I have a question for Canthan, well, not a correction. Did Robert Mugabe really liberate Zimbabwe, or was it as a result of the Lancaster House settlement?
The Lancaster House settlement was a result of the fact that Robert Mugabe basically won the war.
Okay. I hope that puts that to bed. I want to cross quickly to China, which is really, at the moment, a source of some concern for the world with the coronavirus epidemic, which seems to be breaking out. Apparently, over the course of just two or three nights, the infection rate went up by 30% in certain parts of China. We last spoke to Boitabi Somokwena in How's It China, which was a series that we produced not so long ago. She lives in Beijing and moved there in 2015, and she's a marketing and communications specialist. So I thought she's probably someone we can get some real answers from. She's in China already. And the coronavirus, there are a couple of things you need to know. Face masks are not useful. You may be starting to see people wearing them in the UK, but there is limited evidence that they have any effect at all. Viruses are tiny, tiny, tiny things. Face masks are not going to prevent viruses from being passed around. You cannot catch the virus from animals. It is seldom a killer. Most people will have mild symptoms and will recover. However, the virus is making some people seriously ill, giving them pneumonia and breathing problems, and killing a small number who have severe lung issues. So let's talk to Boitabi. So, Boitabi, so what's going on in China at the moment? Is it quiet? Oh, we're still trying to connect. Ay, ay, ay. Just some other info for you in case you want to know. There is no cure at the moment. It's a new virus, so we're still trying to figure it out. No specific medicines or vaccines. Treatment options do exist, but most people get better on their own. And scientists are working hard to develop a vaccine all over the world, but this will have to be tested in trials first, so it could become quite a space of time before we actually get to the point we have any cures.
Yeah, people tend to forget that viruses have the ability to mutate. And so developing a vaccine actually ends up being something that's far more difficult than, you know, in the case of something like smallpox, for example.
And obviously in bacterial infections, which are obviously a lot easier to deal with. Okay, let's go to Boitabi. So, hi, Boitabi. So, how are you?
Hey, Gav. I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. What's Beijing like at the moment? Because I've seen videos and pictures from people that make it look a lot more dramatic than I suppose it is. Or is that not the case?
Yeah. Well, okay. At the moment, it's snowing. It's been snowing since yesterday, and this is not something that we usually experience. So in addition to everything that's been going on, we have the snow, so there are even less people around. But it's quiet. Beijing is quiet in comparison to what it usually is.
Are people not going out in the streets? Is it quiet? When the virus started breaking out in Wuhan, Did people in Beijing just carry on with their normal day-to-day business?
No, not at all. So what? Something that people have to understand is that when this broke, when the story broke, it coincided with Chinese New Year. So already around Chinese New Year, people are leaving Beijing to go to their various hometowns around the country. So Beijing was going to be quiet either way because of that. But because of the virus now, it's even worse because the government is obviously telling people to stay away from public spaces and try to be indoors as much as they possibly can. So people are following that. So yeah, that's one of the reasons why it's been like this. Coincided with the Chinese New Year. Yeah.
Yeah, that was unfortunate because China was about to have their big New Year celebration and it kind of put the halt on that. Are there any special regulations you have to follow at the moment? Are there any kinds of restrictions on movement? Has it hampered your life in any particular way?
Well, in terms of movement, because people are still using, there are a few things that are still operational, like the public transport system. But what happens is places like some restaurants that are open, they have to take your temperature. Some shopping malls are taking your temperature when you walk in and out. You have to always wear a mask. There was actually a video of a drone that was flying the other time, just telling people who are not wearing masks to put on their masks, because obviously one of the reasons this has spread is because of this, it can be coughing and all that. So everyone is required to wear masks. For example, an Uber-like service that's called Didi here, mm-hmm. all the drivers are requested to wear masks and also like sanitize their cars as much as they can, like every single day. So there are those rules in place.
Do you know any people who are in the Wuhan province who are there at the site of the original outbreak?
Mm-hmm. There's actually one friend who's also South African. She studies there, and from talking to her, it's just been ghost city. No one is allowed. I mean, over there, the rules are even more stringent than they are in Beijing because that's where the virus originally started. So they are very serious about making sure that people are not in contact with each other during this period. So yeah, it has been really challenging for them over there.
I heard in news reports that the original outbreak was all the way back in the beginning of December, in the first week of December, but it was only eventually admitted to by the Chinese government much, much later, now in the month of January this year. Are there serious goings-on that we're not privy to in the rest of the world? Because, for example, I believe 60 million people are actually not allowed to leave or enter certain parts of Wuhan province and certain cities in that part of the world. 60 million people is the entire West Coast population of the United States. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yes, so what has happened, like, in terms of with movement, they have stopped. For example, we are not that we are not allowed to, but there are restrictions when it comes to traveling intercity. Some airlines have stopped operations, and in cities around Wuhan, they've definitely restricted moving because if you can, come on, like, it's imagining the number of people that are in China already, and if anyone who is coming from the Wuhan area gets into contact with someone from outside, this is why it has spread so much, because we are talking about a large number of people here. So it has been shocking that they have brought the whole city to a standstill, definitely. But yeah, that is true.
That's very interesting. Well, listen, look after yourself, and if there are any updates, please let us know, because we'd obviously like to be the first to know here, and obviously, you know, take an interest in the South Africans who are in China.
Absolutely. One thing I do have to note, just mention, is the fact that a lot of us are not going back to work. We were all originally meant to go back to work on the 3rd of February, but the government has sent out a message to say we should all just kind of self-quarantine until further notice. Many people might be going back to work next week, but we are not sure about that. So everyone is working remotely right now.
That's no small thing. So look after yourself.
No.
All right. Thanks, Boitabiso.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. Wow. That's a huge number of people kept at home.
I didn't want to ask her uncomfortable questions about other reports because, you really do not want to be fingered by the Chinese when you work in Beijing as someone who might be potentially saying something controversial. But I do want to point out something that came my way via Twitter yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think someone tagged me and Cliff Central in it, which was this report from Taiwan that says that Tencent may have accidentally leaked real data on Wuhan virus deaths.
Uh-oh.
And the figures, which popped up very briefly on screen, were... I can show them to you. The number of infections, the number of deaths, and
just read it because I can't read it from here. Just tell me what it says about the number of deaths and infections.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure.
Because the government has really given us the minimum of information, the Chinese government, and they have said, oh no, it's only a few hundred people.
Yes. So according to the figures that popped up momentarily on Tencent's site, 154,023. Infections, 24,589 deaths, which then suddenly got revised downwards to the government's official figures of 14,446 infections and 304 deaths.
Jesus.
So,
that's quite a jump.
Mm. And, so this is a report that's on taiwannews.com.tw. And people can go and look for it there. In fact, I'll tweet this at some point. I was looking for it in my timeline, but it seems to have disappeared.
Brandon has a comment to make. Brandon says, word on the street is that SAA and the business rescue practitioners have to accelerate immediate job cuts. Unions may have to cave to save the airline. Do we have any updates in that respect from you? Have you been privy to any information with your various sources that you have in all sorts of places?
No, frankly, I've been kind of ignoring it because it's kind of boring right now.
All right.
I suppose when one gets so irritated with Eskom. By the way, just apropos of the stuff that went down this morning, we have this absurd situation that goes down in Johannesburg, where Metro Police get diverted to control traffic at intersections where the traffic lights are working. And yet down the road, there are traffic lights that are not working, and these guys are absent. So we had that situation this morning. So I'm coming off Old Pretoria Road onto Woodmead Drive to get onto the freeway. The traffic lights are out there, so of course it's a clusterfuck of note.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting onto the bridge to turn onto the freeway, the traffic lights are working. And there are two Metro Police officers who are, getting people to stop when the lights are green and then go when the lights are red.
Maybe we should swap the JMPD with SAA and see if they can run it better, and vice versa. We've got enough people in both. All right, Carmen the Millennial says, I'm flying to Perth later this year. SA is the only direct flight, but I've opted to stop over rather than take SAA. Spend 10 hours of my time in Singapore rather than gamble.
I would actually fly through Hong Kong.
You would?
Yes, Hong Kong's much more fun.
All right, the end of the mining in Durban, Cape Town. That's why the flights are also full. That's from Liesl. And the tennis is on Friday night, someone correcting me when I said Saturday. So, yes, that's probably another reason why Cape Town's so busy at the moment. That mining in Durban is a big event.
Mm. Is the mining in Durban go on till Saturday?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
Judging by
there's probably a gala dinner on the night.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, where the politicians are wined and dined. All right, let's go to some other things that are in the news that we may want to refer to. One of them has to do with Ama Bungani. Did you see this story?
Which Ama Bungani story are we talking about?
Let me read it to you quickly. This is where they've argued for MPs to disclose political sponsorships. The Ama Bungani Center for Investigative Journalism argued the Parliamentary Code for Ethics should make it compulsory for members to disclose political sponsorship. How is this still controversial? Surely everyone is for this.
No, it's not controversial. But you see, what I'm curious about is why a center for investigative journalism should now be turning into a lobbying group around what's essentially a political position. I agree with full disclosure all the way, but the job of journalism is actually to go and dig up the information that these guys are wanting to bury, and it's the job of the rest of civil society to actually make out a case for legislation to be changed. But I think that immediately at the point at which, as a body who's, well, essentially, if you're in the business of investigative journalism, you shouldn't be in the business of lobbying.
That's an interesting point. Something I hadn't thought of before. Kind of agree. Magnus Hastek has been talking quite a lot on social media about pensions and private pensions, which are being eyed by greedy government looking for new sources of revenue. Do you think that we should be worried about our pensions?
I've been worried about that for the longest time. And I think over the past week, now that you've had COSATU now coming out and saying that they actually want some of the PIC's funds diverted towards bailing out Eskom. And of course, you see, what becomes really insidious about this is because you have COSATU purportedly speaking on behalf of the workers, which they don't really, but purportedly speaking on behalf of the workers who have their pensions invested via the PIC, and saying, no, it's okay for you to take this and spend it on fixing Eskom because it'll be better for the economy in the long term. And if people now actually buy into this idea, it's only a matter of time before they come after you and me.
Would you put your pension money into Eskom? I don't think there's anyone with any brains anywhere that would say yes.
Absolutely not. And I've said in the past, the way in which we fix Eskom, government actually needs to take the entire Eskom debt and, you know, take on that burden as part of Treasury. You know, so as taxpayers, we'll still pay it off, but you reset Eskom to zero, and that then allows Eskom to rise its tariffs downwards, and you know, the results that can actually flow from that are going to be substantial. But it has to come via Treasury. Tito Mboweni needs to find this money, write off Eskom's debt in its entirety. Otherwise, there is no way that Eskom's ever going to claw its way out of this. Essentially, Eskom sells electricity at a lower price than it costs them to produce it.
Despite the fact that they keep on trying to raise it.
Yes.
And NERSA won't let them.
Absolutely. And the idea, again, of NERSA not wanting to let them raise prices is absurd, because that means that hole keeps getting bigger and bigger. I'm saying that if Eskom goes ahead and let's say Eskom doubles its charges tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, on the plus side, in terms of what happens with that, there's certainty for business, because they can then factor that into their costs of doing business, as opposed to the uncertainty they have right now.
With load shedding,
yeah. Which means that they don't know whether they're going to be able to keep the lights on.
Right.
What it also means is that if Eskom doubles their prices, immediately the alternatives, like wind, like solar, which are the only alternatives that are accessible to us as individuals, because we can't really go out and buy pebble bed modular reactors in our personal capacity.
More's the pity,
exactly.
I know you, Canton, would love to have a pebble bed modular reactor on your roof.
Totally, yeah. I would do that.
One last thing that I think people want to hear your thoughts on, and perhaps they want to throw in their thoughts too, if you do, 0797482090. Angela Merkel's in the country. Do you expect her to have any interesting conversations with Cyril? And what would be a best or worst case scenario for any more improved German and South African relations?
Is this an official visit?
It is.
Okay. Fascinating. And there's no agenda that's yet emerged?
Well,
in
there's
terms
some
of
dinners, there's some lunches. She's speaking to a few students. I've reliably been informed by one of our listeners in Pretoria today. But that's all we've got.
Will she not be addressing a joint sitting of Parliament?
No.
Oh, okay. It's been a while since we had one of those.
Yeah, I don't think that we can get everyone together.
Look, at this stage,
the only reason they come together for the State of the Nation is because they can dress up. Otherwise, we struggle to find a reason to actually make them
look
sit in Parliament.
If I look in terms of what potential priorities there would be right now for Germany in terms of South Africa, I can't really think of any off the top of my head. You do have substantial investments by German companies in this country right now. So,
yeah.
You know, all of the German car manufacturers who have
factories and
so forth out here. But, you know, that's stuff that's pretty much tended to run itself over the longest period.
And has run in spite of government, not because of it.
Yes. There's no bilateral trade agreements between South Africa and Germany because
the EU is in the way.
Because the EU is in the way.
But and then Angela likes that.
Yes. Well, Angela is basically the EU.
All right.
Because you know, the Deutschmark was effectively replaced by the euro. And,
that's right.
Yeah, you remember the saying, Deutschmark über alles.
Not really, but thank you.
All right.
All right, Canton, thank you very much. That's all we got time for this morning. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's. Every week on a Thursday, we get to talk about the things that are going on in the world, in South Africa, and in your life. If you want to make a contribution to that in terms of ideas for any of the shows, or if there's some subject that you would really like us to discuss, as already mentioned, you can email me or you can go to CantonPillay.com, where he's happy to take short questions and answer them wherever possible too. He's going to make an effort, he said.
Well, it's probably easiest just, you know, sending me a direct message on Twitter, because my DMs are actually open on Twitter.
All right. You've asked for it.
No, trolls are blocked mercilessly. So it's
We don't have trolls here. Listen to us. They don't mind being trolled, but they can usually handle a little bit of disagreement as well. All right. Thank you very much. CliffCentral.com.